1 Samuel 27. I want to review just a few passages going into chapter 30, just so I remind ourselves, since it's been 3 or 4 weeks in the process of these chapters. Notice with me 1 Samuel 27, and this is where this starts. But I want to remind us where we've been so that we understand a little bit more and reminded what chapter 30 is all about. It says here in verse 1 of chapter 27, "And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day at the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines, and Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any coast of Israel. So I shall escape, so shall I escape out of his hand." Or, again, that's human reasoning, as we've already seen. And again, I remind you in verse 2, he's not backsliding into the world by himself. He's taken, notice, the 600 men with him and their families, and they're going to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. All right, so that's very significant. It says in verse 5, "And David said unto Achish, If I have now found grace in thine eyes, why is David seeking grace from the enemy of Israel, of God's people? But if I have now found grace in thine eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country, that I may dwell there, for why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with thee?" Then Achish gave him Ziklag that day, wherefore Ziklag pertaineth unto the kings of Judah unto this day. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. That's a year and 4 months too long, as we understand Scripture. Notice chapter 28, verses 1 and 2 then. "Came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men." Again, he's dragging 600 men with him to fight against Israel with the enemies of Israel. "And David said to Achish, Surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do." Of course, he's reported in the end of chapter 27 all the raids that he was doing. "And Achish said to David, Therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever." David is, by Achish's admission here, David is going to be protecting the enemy. I mean, he's going to protect the king, one of the kings of the Philistines. Then head on down to chapter 29. "Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek." I remind you again, chapter 4, verse 1 talks about Aphek, so this is a repeat. "And the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the rear reward with Achish." So they're traveling at the back of the procession here of the Philistines. And says, then said the Philistines, the princes of the Philistines, "What do these Hebrews here?" And Achish said unto the princes of the Philistines, "Is not this David the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, which hath been with me these days or these years, and I have found no fault in him since he fell unto me unto this day? Woe unto us when the enemy speaks well of us." It says, "And the princes of the Philistines were wroth with him, with Achish. And the princes of the Philistines said unto him, Make this fellow return, that he may go again to his place, back to Ziklag, which thou hast appointed him. And let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. For with should he reconcile himself unto his master, unto Saul? Should it not be with the heads of these men?" He's going to take some of our heads and reconcile with Saul. And again, it says, of course, Achish says in verse 6 and through 6 and 7, the lords of the Philistines do not favor thee. So I'm sorry, David, you're just going to have to head back. I want you to go with me, but you're going to have to go back. Notice David's response again in verse 8. "And David said unto Achish, But what have I done?" "What have I done? And what hast thou found in thy servant so long as I've been with thee unto this day?" A year and four months. "That I may not go fight against the enemies of my lord the king." He's not talking to Saul. He's talking to an enemy of Israel. This is how low David has gone spiritually at this point. So again, he's talking about going with Achish to fight against the enemies of my lord the king. Who are they going to fight? They're fighting with the Israelites. Again, how low David has gone here. And let me remind you that David is days away. He is literally days away from becoming the second king of Israel. Notice chapter 30 then. All right, so end of verse 11, the Philistines went up to Jezreel. They proceed on after David and his men returned early the next morning. I want to point out here, I want you to notice here that while David is doing that in a backslidden condition, he literally left his home city unguarded. It says here in verse 1, and it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day. So they're gone 3 days, and it says that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag and smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire. I want to point out, I believe, a very clear application for us here in this verse. Of course, he left the city with no defense. When we go to the world, we leave our families vulnerable, our children vulnerable. I want you to think about this. How many times I've seen over the years, somebody goes to the world because, you know, they're discouraged, you know, they don't like what's going on in the church, whatever the case may be. So they decide to go to the world. They literally leave their children and their families vulnerable. And the outcome of that is horrible in relation to the children in many cases. Horrible. I mean, they go to the world and literally their children walk away from God, all of those things. Again, the fact that he's with the Philistines for 3 days left the city vulnerable. So the Amalekites invaded, they burned the city, and notice verse 2, and had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. Notice it says, so David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives, their sons, and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. I have a note written in my Bible here, sorrow that could have been avoided. David could have avoided this sorrow. They could have avoided this grief. And you think about this. Why was he even helping Achish? So again, he left their home city totally unguarded, unprotected. And notice David's two wives were taken captives in verse 5. Now verse 6, notice, and David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him. Why are they saying this? Because they're blaming David, because if they had been there, if they had kept the city under guard, then they would not have had to go through this distress. So the people are so distressed and grieved about this whole situation that they're all of a sudden talk is going on that let's stone David. Think about this. He left himself in a bad situation. Notice, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But notice this, David recognizes how low he's gotten, and he does the right thing. Notice he encourages himself in the Lord his God. So yes, he left everything in a bad situation because of his backsliding. And David said to Abiathar the priest, notice not only is he encouraging himself in the Lord his God, but now he's seeking direction once again. I'm going to ask you this, from chapter 27 on, can you show me where he sought any direction from the Lord? Well, I might as well. Notice human reasoning. He justifies going to the Philistines so that he can escape Saul. Human reasoning, he's not asking God for direction anymore. And can I remind you that this is what we need to do right here. We need to go here for direction. And I'll tell you what, the times when I've been backslidden and I'm not as close to the Lord as I'm not getting as much out of God's word, I'm not eagerly seeking God's direction. Again, we need to be careful not going to a place where we shouldn't be. Again, he's seeking direction from the Lord again. He says to Abiathar, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And again, this is the ephod of the high priest. And Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David. It says, David inquired at the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered, the Lord answered him, pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So David went, he and the 600 men that were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those that were left behind stayed. Now, it's very interesting what's presented here in this chapter, because of what happens here in this section. David actually creates a statute and a law in Israel that he would practice as king. Notice David pursued. He and 400 men, notice 200 were left behind. Notice for 200 abode behind, which were so faint, notice that they I have this word circled, could not go over the brook Besor. It does not say that they would not. David, we're tired of fighting. No, notice, they were so weary that they could not go over the brook Besor. It wasn't that they, you know, decided, I want to take some leisure time here. You go on to battle. Notice again, they were so weary they could not go over the brook. It says they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread and he did eat. And they made him drink water and they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him, for he'd eaten no bread nor drunk any water 3 days and three nights. So David says unto him, verse 13, to whom belongest thou? And whence art thou? So just this Egyptian, they just happened to find him, this Egyptian servant. And notice it says, he answered David, verse 13, I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me because three days ago, I fell sick. We made an invasion upon the south of the Kerethites and upon the coast which belongeth to Judah, and upon the south of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. And can I remind you that this is some of the area where David was going and doing some raids that we saw back in chapter 27. And David said to him, canst thou bring me down to this company? So this is going to be an assistance for them to find the Amalekites a little quicker. And he said, swear unto me by God that thou wilt neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will bring thee down to this company. And when he had brought him down, notice, behold, they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. Notice, they're celebrating here because of the victories that they've had. And of course, I remind you back in chapter 27, David had attacked the Amalekites before. It says, David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day. And there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men, which rode upon camels and fled. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And notice the fulfillment of God's promise here in verse 19. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all. And David took all the flocks and the herds, which they drave before those other cattle, and said, this is David's spoil. Now, that sounds pretty selfish, but we're going to find out in this chapter it was not selfish. He's actually having plans to minister to the people of Judah. It says in verse 21, and David came to the 200 men, which were so faint that they could not follow David, whom they had made also to abide at the brook Besor. And notice they went forth to meet David and to meet the people. Notice, they went to meet David. So they're not hiding out, oh no, we're going to be in trouble now because we stayed behind. Notice, they went to meet the people that were with him. And when David came near to the people, notice, he, David, saluted them. That tells me David had no bad feelings toward them for staying behind. Again, he understood that they could not go over. Verse 22, then answered all the wicked men and men of Belial. All right, so men of the devil, of those that went with David. All right, so not all of the 600 men were good men to have with them. But notice that these wicked men, they said, because they went not with us, we will not give them aught of the spoil that we have recovered, save to every man his wife and his children. Notice, that they may lead them away and depart. They no longer wanted them around. They didn't go with us to the battle, so we want them out of here. Then said David, ye shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord hath given us, who hath preserved us and delivered the company that came against us into our hand. For who will hearken unto you in this matter? Who's going to listen to you? Notice it says, but as his part is that goeth down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. They shall part alike. And it was so from that day forward that he made it a statute and an ordinance for Israel unto this day. I remember years ago hearing a preacher preach on that thought, those who tarry by the stuff. You notice here there's both an offensive and a defensive posture that a military needs. And David says, no, we're not going to judge them because they were not able to go over. In fact, it's possible that David even learned the lesson by not having a defense to protect and so on. Again, they're tarrying by the stuff. They're leaving some things behind so they could travel lighter to catch up with the Amalekites. So again, he makes it a statute and ordinance in the nation of Israel. Now, you notice in verse 26, this is why I say the spoil was not a selfish thing that David accumulated to himself. Verse 26, and when David came to Ziklag, he sent of the spoil unto the elders of Judah, even to his friends, saying, behold, a present for you of the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. I'm not going to take time to read all these verses here, but I'm just going to mention that there's 14 different areas where he sends out part of the spoil of the conquering of the Amalekites. And again, he's reaching out to his tribe, and can I remind you that some of his tribe actually turned on him, you know, as we've already seen in previous chapters. Notice then verse 31, and to them which were in Hebron, which is very significant because that's where he's going to establish his kingdom, we see in 2 Samuel, and to all the places where David himself and his men were wont to hunt. Now, I want to point out something here. When we see that David is now returning back to the Lord as far as his relationship with him, God was able to use David once again when he returned to the right place. I don't know how many times over the years you have kind of backslid on God. A lot of times it happens in a time of discouragement and difficulty and trial. We're tempted to, in the flesh, kind of distance ourselves from the Lord. But I want you to notice here that David was able to be used by God again when he got to the right place. When we find ourselves in the wrong place in relation to God, the best thing is to turn around, go back to where we left our relationship with God. Now, as we move in chapter 31, I want you to notice this in relation to King Saul now. And again, as I said, David is just days away now from becoming king of Israel. Now, the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. Now, I don't know why I have all these F words circled here. Fought, the Philistines are fighting against Israel. Israel is fleeing, and they fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. Total opposite things. But I want to point out here, spiritually, Israel is at a low point because of their king. And as I pointed out at the beginning of our study of King Saul, all right, so you think about King Saul spiritually. Was he a good king? Spiritually, he didn't even know who Samuel was, remember, at the beginning. I mean, he's asking Samuel, can you show us where the seer is? I'm the seer. He didn't even recognize who Samuel was, even though he lived, if I remember right, 10, 20 miles from where Samuel operated his ministry in Ramah. So again, we see here that spiritually, Israel is literally under the judgment of God spiritually. And so King Saul spiritually is bankrupt, and he's the representation of a spiritually bankrupt nation. Notice this, again, because of that, God delivers them into the hands of the Philistines here, at least for a while. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Melchishua, Saul's sons. Jonathan's descendants actually are even mentioned in 1 Chronicles 9. So again, his family line continues. But the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Now, I'm going to plan another study here. We're finishing up this here tonight, but there's a few other things I want to address here in relation to Saul here. But notice it says, then said Saul unto his armor bearer. Here's why it's a good thing that David's no longer his armor bearer. Notice this. He says unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith. Remember, David at one point was Saul's armor bearer. King Saul would have been asking David to do this. Of course, he was anointed as the next king. Lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. The word abuse there carries the idea of misusing and mocking him. But notice it says here, but his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell upon it. I want to do a quick study on suicide here in another lesson. Not tonight for the sake of time, but Notice it says, when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. Again, I want to take a look at scripture as far as that and suicide. But so Saul died and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together. I want you to hold your place there. Notice with me Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. I want you to consider that literally King Saul played the part of a fool. In relation to that, I want you to notice this passage in Proverbs 1, verse 20 and following. Because of the foolishness that King Saul brought into his life, notice it says here in verse 20, wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets, she crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates, in the city she uttereth her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, notice, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. All right, you think about King Saul. Saul did not turn at the reproof of Samuel on more than one occasion. Notice, turn you at my reproof. Saul needed wisdom, but he was not listening to the voice of wisdom. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you, and I will make known my words unto you, words of wisdom. Because I have called and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. You think about how many times King Saul rejected the commands of God through Samuel. Notice he set at naught the counsel of God, and he would not listen to the reproof that came from God through Samuel. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind. Notice, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. Listen to that. You'll call upon me, and I will not answer. Remember, that's why King Saul went to find a woman with a familiar spirit, because God was no longer answering him when he was seeking for God's wisdom. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me, for that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel, they despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way. Think of the end of King Saul. And be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Go back to 1 Samuel 31. Again, you think about the end of King Saul. And remember again what Samuel said to him. When you were little in your own eyes, God chose you to be king. He became too big to listen to God. Verse 7, and when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side of Jordan, notice, saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled. Notice, they forsook the cities. They left the cities. And notice the Philistines came and dwelt in them. In relation to this, notice with me 2 Samuel chapter 4. We're going to see something. This is the timing of this, chronologically. 2 Samuel 4, notice verse 4. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son. Notice Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel. And his nurse took him up and fled. It came to pass as she made haste to flee that he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth. Of course, David is going to show kindness to Mephibosheth later. Notice again back in 1 Samuel 31. So that's the timing when that takes place, when they're fleeing, they're leaving the cities. And of course, the enemy comes and takes over these cities. Verse 8, and it came to pass on the morrow, on the next day, that when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. King Saul didn't want the Philistines to come and abuse him. They're going to make a mockery of him and his sons. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols, house of Dagon in particular, among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth. This is a female goddess, if I remember correctly. And they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. Now, why don't you pause there and go back to chapter 11. Here's some people who have an opportunity to repay the kindness of King Saul at the beginning of his reign. Chapter 11, verse 1. Then Nahash, the Ammonite, came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us. Notice they surrender right up front, and we will, makes a demand. Notice, make a covenant with us, and we will serve thee. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition will I make a covenant with you, that I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for reproach upon all Israel. That's you think about the extreme of that. And the elders of Jabesh said unto him, give us 7 days respite, that we may send messengers unto all the coast of Israel, and then, if there be no man to save us, we will come out to thee. And of course, remember that Saul took a bunch of men, and they delivered the people of Jabesh-Gilead. Now, here's the opportunity that they have to repay Saul after he's dead. Notice when the inhabitants, verse 11 of chapter 31, when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night. Notice the courage that they have here, and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his three sons from the wall of Bethshan and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. And I have a note in my Bible here. I believe this is the only reference to cremation in Israel. I can't remember, but that's not a common thing because they believed as far as burial for resurrection and so on. But it says in verse 13, and they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. You think about this. The end of King Saul. He could have. In fact, God said that God could have, would have established his kingdom forever. But because of his rebellion against God, the kingdom literally was taken from him and given to his neighbor. Of course, we understand that as being David. But he started off so well, it seemed, and ends up committing suicide and shamefully entreated and so on. But when we distance ourselves from God, you think about David and King Saul, we're capable of all kinds of things. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to learn a lesson from not just King Saul, but also David. As David was backslidden away from you, God, he made some bad choices, bad decisions. Lord, help us to remember that, especially we as men, when we backslide away from you, we leave our families and our children vulnerable. So Lord, I pray that you'd help us as men to remain close to you and right in our relationship with you. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to earn these lessons and not backslide into the world. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.